भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय शुश्रूषोषधानस्य वासुदेवकतारुचिः श्यान्महत्सेवया विप्राः पुण्यतीर्थनिषेवनात्. ओ ट्वाइस बॉर्न सेजेस, बाय सर्विंग दोज डिवोटीज हु आर कंप्लीटली फ्रीड फ्रॉम ऑल वाइस, ग्रेट सर्विस इज डन. बाय सच सर्विस वन गेन्स एफिनिटी फॉर हियरिंग द मैसेजेस ऑफ वासुदेव. शृण्वतां स्वकथाः कृष्णः पुण्यश्रवणकीर्तनः हृदयन्तस्तो ह्यभद्राणि विदुनोति सुहृत्सताम्. श्री कृष्ण, द पर्सनालिटी ऑफ गॉड हेड हु इज द परमात्मा सुपर सोल इन एवरीवन्स हार्ट एंड द बेनिफैक्टर ऑफ द ट्रूथफुल डिवोटी, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who has developed the urge to hear his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. Nashta prayeshva bhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिकी. बाय रेगुलर अटेंडेंस इन क्लासेस ऑन द भागवतम एंड बाय रेंडरिंग ऑफ सर्विस टू द प्योर डिवोटी, ऑल दैट इज ट्रबलसम टू द हार्ट इज ऑलमोस्ट कंप्लीटली डिस्ट्रॉयड. एंड लविंग सर्विस अनटु द पर्सनालिटी ऑफ गॉड हेड हु इज प्रेस्ड विद ट्रांसेंडेंटल सॉन्ग्स इज एस्टैब्लिश्ड एज एन इरिवोकेबल फैक्ट. तदा रजस्तमो भावाः कामलोबादयश्च ये चेत एतैरनाविद्धं सितं सत्वे प्रसीदति. एज सून एज इरिवोकेबल लविंग सर्विस इज एस्टैब्लिश्ड इन द हार्ट, द एफेक्ट्स ऑफ नेचर्स मोड्स ऑफ पैशन एंड इग्नोरेंस सच एज लस्ट, desire and hankering disappear from the heart. Then the devotee is established in goodness and he becomes completely happy.
Evam prasanna manaso bhagavad bhakti yogatah bhagavat tattva vijnanam mukta sangasya jayate.
Thus established in the mode of unalloyed goodness, the man whose mind has been enlivened by contact with devotional service to the Lord gains positive scientific knowledge of the personality of Godhead in the stage of liberation from all material association.
Vidyate hridaya grantesh chidyante sarva samshayah क्षीयन्ते चास्य कर्माणि दृष्ट एवात्मनीश्वरे.
Thus the knot in the heart is pierced and all misgivings are cut to pieces. The chain of fruitive actions is terminated when one sees the self as master.
हरे कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna. Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya.
May only smile but among Prabhupada, Raja Gacharya, also this is the AC. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Nija, Namacharya, Harita, Stalker, Kija. Rams Goho, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadha, Vasya Gaur, Bhakti Vrindakija, Sri Sri Rana Krishna, Dovala Vida Shama Kundara Kudda, Giri Govardhan Kijai, Sri Vrindavan Dham Kijai, Navadav Dham Kijai, Ganga Shamana Tulsi Bhakti Devi Kijai, Ananda Koti Vaishnava Vrindakijai. Devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gurung, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prashtaya Buddhade Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Saraswata Devi Gauravani Prachadane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashtachadesha Tarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 87, Verse 20. Sakrita Puradesh Amish Abahir Antara Samvaranam Tava Purusham Vadan Jakila Shakti Dratam Sakritam. Iti Nirgatim Vivichak Kavayo Nigamapa Vapanam. Bhavata upasatengrim abhavambhuvi visvasta.
By himself,
Sruta created Pureshu in the bodies, Amishu, these, Abahi, not externally, Antara, or internally, Sambaranam, whose factual envelopment, Tava, your Purusham, living entity, Vedanti, the Vedas say, Akila, of all Shakti energies, Drita, of the possessor, Amsa, as the expansion, Kritam, manifested, Iti, in this manner, Nara, of the living entity, Gatim, status, Vivichya, ascertaining, Kavayo, learned sages, Nigama, of the Vedas, Abapanam, the field in which all offerings are sown, Bhavata, your Upanasate, they worship, Angrim, the feet, Abhavam, which cause the cessation of material existence. Bhuvi, on the earth, Visvasata, having developed faith. Translation, the individual living entity while inhabiting the material bodies he has created for himself by his karma actually remains uncovered by either gross or subtle matter. This is so because, as the Vedas describe, he is part and parcel of you, the possessor of all potencies. Having determined this to be the status of the living entity, learned sages become imbued with faith and worship your lotus feet, to which all the Vedic sacrifices in this world are offered, and which are the source of liberation. Purport, not only does the Supreme Lord remain totally uncontaminated when he resides within the material bodies of the conditioned souls, but even the infinitesimal jiva souls are never directly touched by the coverings of ignorance and lust they acquire while passing through repeated cycles of birth and death. Thus the Taittiriya Upanishad proclaims, Sayaschayam Purusha, Yaschasau, Aditya Saeka, the soul of the embodied living being is one with him who stands within the sun. Similarly, the Chandogya Upanishad teaches Tat Tvamasi, you are non-different from the Supreme Truth. In this prayer, the personified Vedas refer to the finite enjoyer of material bodies, the jiva soul, as an expansion of the transcendental reservoir of all potencies, the Supreme Lord. The term Amsa Kritam, made as his portion, must be properly understood, however, in this context. The jiva is not created at any time, nor is he the same kind of expansion of the Lord as the omnipotent Vishnu Tattva expansions. The Supreme Soul is the proper object of all worship, and the subordinate jiva soul is meant to be his worshiper. The Supreme Lord enacts his pastimes to show himself in innumerable aspects of his personality, whereas the jiva is forced to change bodies whenever his accumulated karmic reactions so dictate. According to Sri Narada Pancharata, yatatastam tu chidrupam svasamvedya vinirgatam ranchitam gunaragena sa jiva iti katyate. The marginal potency who is spiritual by nature, who emanates from the self-cognizant Samvit energy, and who becomes tainted by his attachment to the modes of nature, is called the jiva. Although the jiva soul is also an expansion of Lord Krishna, he is distinguished from Krishna's independent Vishnu expansions by his constitutional position on the margin between spirit and matter. As the Mahavaraha Purana explains, Samsas Chata Vivinamsa Iti Advida Sa Ishite. Amsino yat tu samarchyam yat sarupam yatastiti.
tadeva nanu matropi vedam swam samsano quachet vibhanam so opa shakti sya kinchit samarja matra yuk. The Supreme Lord is known in two ways, in terms of his plenary portions and his separated expansions. Between the plenary expansions and their source of expansion, there is never any essential difference in terms of either their capabilities, forms, or situations. The separated expansions, on the other hand, possess only minute potency, being endowed only to a small extent with the Lord's powers. The conditioned soul in this world appears as if covered by matter internally as well as externally. Externally, gross matter surrounds him in the form of his body and environment, while internally desire and aversion impinge upon his consciousness. But from the transcendental perspective of realized sages, both kinds of material coverings are insubstantial. By logically eliminating all material identities, which are misconceptions based on the soul's gross and subtle coverings, a thoughtful person can determine that the soul is nothing material. Rather, he is a pure spark of divine spirit, a servant of the Supreme Godhead. Understanding this, one should worship the Supreme Lord's lotus feet. Such worship is the fully blossomed flower of the tree of Vedic rituals. One's realization of the splendor of the Lord's lotus feet, gradually nourished by the offering of Vedic sacrifices, automatically bears the fruits of liberation from material existence and irrevocable faith in the Lord's mercy. One can accomplish all this while still living in the material world. As Lord Krishna states in Gopal Tapani Upanishad, Matura Mandalaya Stu Jambudvipi Sitota Va, Yorchayat Patimam Prati Same Priyataro Bhavi. One who worships me in my deity form while living in the district of Mathura, or indeed anywhere in Jambudvipa, becomes most dear to me in this world. Sridhar Swami prays that Amsasya Mameshna Tvanmaya Krita Bandhanam Tvatangri Sevam Adishya Parananda Nivartaya. My Lord, please free me your partial expansion from the bondage created by your maya. Please do this, O abode of supreme bliss, by directing me to the service of your feet. Translation: the individual living entity, while inhabiting the material bodies he has created for himself by his karma, actually remains uncovered by either gross or subtle matter. This is so because, as the Vedas describe, he is part and parcel of you, the possessor of all potencies. Having determined this to be the status of the living entity, learned sages become imbued with faith and worship your lotus feet, to which all the Vedic sacrifices in this world are offered and which are the source of liberation. So this verse speaks about the jivas, as the previous verses also did. Here, of course, the jiva is identified as a purusha. Purusha, of course, also refers to the Supreme Lord, who's a person. But here it refers to the jiva. So the Vedas talk about the jiva. And what do they say? That he is in his body, but at the same time, he is not covered up. And the jiva is an amsa of the Lord. Of course, we understand that amsa means a part, but part not in a literal sense that we take an object and we start cutting it into bits. So the Lord is never cut into pieces. So in that sense, the jivas are not amsa, not in that sense, not part in that sense. But the word amsa is often used not only in relation to the jiva, but in relation to the forms of the Lord. They are called swa-amsa, the Lord's own parts. So they're non-different from the Supreme Lord. And then we have the vibhinamsa, the separate parts, the different parts. So we have the parts which are exactly the Supreme Lord. The Lord expands himself into many different forms, but he's one entity. So those are called swamsa. And then we have the Vibhinamsa, that is the jivas, who are different, separate parts. Huh? So in other words, they're distinguished from the other expansions, that is the forms of the Supreme Lord. Obviously, they're different. Hmm? So as explained in the purport, they are amsa in the sense that they are anu, etc. But they share some of the qualities of the Supreme Lord, that is consciousness, they're eternal, they can experience bliss, they can do things, unlike matter, which can't do anything, cannot experience anything. So distinct from matter, but also distinct from the expansions of the Supreme Lord, who are non-different from the Lord. They are swa-amsa, so they're exactly with the same powers as the Lord. So these are other types of amsas. So the amsas are never created. They are eternally in that position. As the purport explains, they're often called tatasta, or situated on the border. So the border, it means they're not the Supreme Lord, and nor are they matter. They're kind of in between. They have qualities like the Supreme Lord, but they can also be influenced by matter, unlike the Lord. And they can take up coverings of gross and subtle bodies, and then develop ahankara and desires, etc., unlike the Lord. Yet here the verse says they are uncovered. They don't have any covering. Internally, externally, they're not covered. Abhahir antara samvaram. So what does that mean? We know that they do have gross and subtle bodies, etc. Well, the idea is that the jiva never changes, ultimately. He has a body, he has a subtle body, gross body, etc., he has desires, but the jiva actually remains a jiva forever. He never becomes matter. Definitely he gets covered by it and influenced by the body, but he never becomes matter. He never gets influenced by it in that way. Definitely influence is there, but not that he becomes matter at any point in time. So he's jiva is always jiva, a particle of consciousness. However, that consciousness may manifest to various degrees, depending on the body and depending on the karma of the jiva. So we have jivas in low position and high position. The jivas in low position manifest their conscious qualities very little. And they're not very active. So we say they're very covered up by their material bodies. So we have small plants and animals and things like that. And as the advanced life forms manifest in different with different jivas, then consciousness becomes a little more elevated. And they develop senses and perceptions, so they can, and then activities, etc. And then we come to higher animals. They even have intelligence. They can do things. We see the monkeys, they're very intelligent. They can do many things. Even dogs can do many things. They got higher intelligence in one sense, more than some animals, lower animals. But then we come to the human being, very intelligent. And then the quality of the human being, he is aware of himself. So that's a big step, to be aware of yourself. Then you're aware of past, present, future, etc. I need high intelligence. So this is a big step in the jiva. So therefore the human body is celebrated, because in that body the jiva can develop higher and higher consciousness by his own endeavors along with the mercy of the Lord. A lower species, his intelligence and consciousness are not developed very much, so he cannot practice spiritual life. So, as Prabhupada says in the introduction to Bhagavad Gita, the animals and whatever, they're also discussing and saying, where's my food, where's my food, etc. So they get some consciousness. But they don't ask the question, who am I? What is my final destination in life? Am I not the material body? Am I something else? Etc. They don't ask those questions. Animals, human being can ask those questions. So it's special. So although the jiva does have bodies, etc., and we can say it does obstruct his consciousness, ultimately all jivas can move from one body to the other, and they can also advance, and then they can get out of the bodies completely. So they're not eternally doomed to be stuck in material bodies in the material world. So that is because their nature is unchanging in one sense. They have this conscious potential for activity, knowing things, developing bliss, etc. So that does not change. In that sense, they're uncovered. But definitely they are of higher and lower grades of consciousness in this material world. And therefore the lower species are not considered very fortunate. If we, by karma, you end up in a lower body, then it's not a very good fortune. If you get a human body, very good. So in this way we go to higher planets, then you're less covered by the impeded by your material bodies, until you get up to Brahma, very, very fine material bodies, like Mahatattva or something like that, very fine body. So almost uncovered completely, unobstructed by that body. And of course, he's also very spiritually advanced. So the jiva is in this material world, and he is eternally the amsa of the Supreme Lord. So the word amsa means that he is dependent. He is not independent. So he is a small particle, eternal, and dependent on the Supreme Lord, and sharing some of the qualities of the Supreme Lord. It's the Supreme Lord himself that has willed this jiva to exist. It's by his will that the jiva shakti manifests and all the jivas manifest. Here it says the akila shakti drata. The Lord is the possessor of all shakti. So by his powers, he manifests these jivas in this particular way with these particular qualities in the material world. Here it talks about nrugatim. When you become a human being, then you can develop a goal, a higher goal. So the sages begin to deliberate on what is the goal of the human being. Now they cannot do so on their own, and they must take shelter of the Vedic literature. So it also speaks here about the Vedic literature, etc., and the worship that is indicated. So this is the nigama here, the nigama avapanam. Through that they can understand that the goal is the Supreme Lord, that one should worship the Supreme Lord. And by doing that, what happens? Abhavam, when they're free from material world, free from bodies in this material world. So in this way, the jiva reaches his potential of being completely uncovered by gross and subtle bodies, and uninfluenced by material desires. To do that, what does he have to do? He has to worship the lotus feet of the Lord. By this method, he attains that goal of becoming freed from material energy completely. So these verses here directly indicate the difference between the jiva and the Supreme Lord. And then it never says here that the jiva becomes the Lord. He worships the Lord and he gets liberated from his material body, but he never becomes the Lord. So these are the Upanishads speaking. Now we see that people will quote Upanishads to say, no, the jiva is the Supreme Lord. Tatvamasi, you are that. And they'll quote so many other places that you become Brahman, you are Brahman, etc. So, yes, Upanishads do make such statements, but then we have to understand the real meaning of those statements and the context of those statements. Huh? So as we see, often the idea of becoming Brahman means that you develop the qualities of the Supreme Lord. So in other words, like the Lord, you are free of birth, death, old age, disease, you experience bliss, etc., have a spiritual body, etc. So it doesn't exactly mean that you become that, you're something else. So here the emphasis is upon that Jiva is a separate Amsa, it's not the Supreme Lord, and he never becomes the Supreme Lord, he is Amsa by his nature eternally. This is the conclusion of the Shruti's here speaking, that there is no, it's not that the Jiva is ultimately an illusion, when he gets rid of his illusion he becomes the Supreme Lord, that's not the actual statement of the Upanishads. So that is what they're making clear here, that Shiva is the eternal Amsa of the Lord, and then he simply gets perfection by worshipping the Supreme Lord. So the impersonal interpretation of the Upanishads is here rejected in favor of the idea that the Jiva is completely different from the Supreme Lord. Here, of course, the Lord, not so much is spoken about the Lord, other verses will speak about that, but also that Lord is not impersonal. He has form, he has qualities, he has activities, etc. So here it's talking about the feet of the Supreme Lord. Of course, the Vedas are here praising Mahavishnu when he's sleeping. So obviously they're praising a person, and here they're talking about his feet. Yeah. So by worshipping your feet, people can get free from the material world. Yeah. So that that supreme entity, Brahman, is not impersonal. It is the Supreme Lord, a person with a form who has feet. So here they say you worship the feet, and then you get liberation. That Supreme Brahman is not impersonal. He has a particular form, he has limbs, he has a body, he has feet, he has hands, he has eyes, etc. In this way, the Upanishads also are making it very clear that not only the Jiva is not Brahman, but then Brahman itself is a person with a form. Yeah? And he is the object of worship for the Jivas. The Upanishads themselves are setting a good example because they are acting as servants of the Lord. So they're there in their eternal forms, and they are worshipping the Supreme Lord by glorifying him with these verses. So they're doing a type of kirtan, glorifying the Supreme Lord. So that glorification means ultimately they will praise him for his wonderful form, qualities, and activities. How else can we glorify? Then we have to start describing that person so we can describe his qualities, his form, and his activities. Simply by offering these prayers, that itself is an indication of the personality of the Lord. He is not impersonal at all. They're glorifying a person with his qualities, form, and activities. So throughout these verses, various activities and qualities of the Lord are expressed. Then in relation to that, we have the discussion of the Jiva in relation to the Supreme Lord. It is the Lord's merciful arrangement that he manifests the Jiva with particular qualities so that the Jiva can worship the Lord and attain the Lord. This is all mercy of the Supreme Lord. His particular plan is very merciful. So he manifests Jivas with a particular type of nature so that they can actually attain this perfection of worshiping the Lord and experiencing bliss. So, the Lord has a particular plan for the way in which He has manifested these jivas. So, here it's called the possessor of all shaktis. The shaktis are merely a way of expressing how the Lord is able to implement His desire. And desire wants to do something. How can the Lord do something? He has a desire. How He can do it? So, shaktis do it. He has certain powers by which He can fulfill His desires or His will. So He desires to experience His bliss. And therefore, He has these expansions called jivas. And then the Lord experiences bliss in relation to the jivas through rasa. So the jiva has to be manifested in a certain way so that bliss and rasa can manifest. So all of this happens by the shakti of the Lord. So we have the tatastha shakti, not the marginal energy. This is a fulfillment of the Lord's desire through His particular shakti. That tatastha shakti manifests all the jivas, and then the jivas in the material world have bodies. The jivas worship the Lord. They get out of the material world, and then they attain bliss in relationship to the Lord in the spiritual world. So that is the Lord's plan for the jiva. So the shaktis are merely the instrument by which the Lord can fulfill His desires. And because He has all knowledge, then the shaktis act perfectly. There is no fault in any of the shaktis. So even material energy or maya shakti is perfect in its own way. In spite of the fact that we may think it is unconscious and therefore imperfect or whatever. Definitely inferior. But it also is, it operates perfectly in relation to the Supreme Lord. And therefore we'll have descriptions in other places of how that material energy operates. We have planets created, we have places, in other words. Then we have bodies for the living entities, here called the Pura. And these places, the bodies, have senses on them. And the senses enable the jiva to experience things in this world. So we have sense objects, the senses are attached to sense objects. And then we have devatas attached to the senses, who make the senses and the sense objects come together in certain ways so we get experiences. And this way, the jiva gets knowledge, jiva gets experience, jiva develops desires, etc. So the jiva in the material world can operate because of arrangement of material energy, which is done by this maya shakti under the direction of the Supreme Lord. So maya shakti is also created in a certain way to give benefit to the jiva. He gives them material happiness, and He also allows them to get out of the material world. So maya shakti is not all bad. It has manifest vidya within it by which the jiva can get out of the material world. So this is a skillful creation of the Supreme Lord also. So the maya shakti and the tatastha shakti are both instruments for the omniscient Lord's plan. And they act perfectly so that the jiva can develop bliss in relationship with the Lord.
The last paragraph of this purport, Srila Swami is praying, "My Lord, please free me, Your partial expansion." How to understand this? Like, is it the devotee is asking the Lord to free himself from maya? Because he is creating the mistake. Why should he complain to the Lord that your maya is disturbing me?
Of course, generally the devotees not only pray for getting out of the material world, the implicit desire of the devotees is, "Let me serve you eternally." And maya is acting as an obstacle to that. But then sometimes we see there are various places in the Bhagavatam where they offer prayers and please deliver me from this world of suffering, deliver me from samsara. Or promises are given by reading this story, you get free of samsara or something like that. So that, of course, is a secondary result. For the person practicing pure bhakti, then the main goal is eternal service to the Lord. That's all. And everything else, all these are secondary things which accompany that as, let's say, favorable elements for that. So about for other people, then these other goals are often expressed. So therefore, we have other goals mentioned in the Bhagavatam also, some of which are maybe material, some of which are like liberation. So these are there to encourage people who have less understanding of pure bhakti. But ultimately, the pure one who's in pure bhakti is concentrating on service to the Lord.
Gopal Tapani.
Of course, he also says, Tfad Angri Sevam, which is a service to your lotus feet. But here is acting as the means. But that's also expressed in the verse itself, where it says we worship the lotus feet and we get, that is abhavam, we get free from the material world. So it's, we can say in one sense the Upanishads do express this also, as Bhagavatam also expresses it. The Upanishads also often express this, that we worship in order to get out of the material world. So, but then again, we know the higher principle is eternal service to the Lord in the spiritual world. But that is not understood by some people. So therefore, this immediate goal of beyond birth and death, beyond samsara, is often emphasized in the Upanishads. Amrita means nectar. It also means freedom from death, freedom from samsara. So often the promise is, okay, you worship the Lord and amrita, you're free from death. So you know, that aspect is often emphasized in the Upanishads.
This Gopal Tapani Upanishad, the Mathura Mandali, that verse is given here. Anyone who worships me in my deity form by living in district of Mathura, or indeed anywhere in Jambudvipa, becomes more dear to me. The question is like, only in Mathura, anywhere, any temple, authorized temple, it is.
Well, this is actually glorifying Mathura Mandala, of course. But then it says anywhere in Jambudvipa also, it says whether you're situated. The idea is that you're living in this material world somewhere. So the idea is that, well, you have a material body, by worshipping the deity form of the Lord, then you become very dear to the Lord. So you're practicing bhakti, and the Lord becomes very attracted to that. So we do, in other words, we're doing sadhana in this material world, and this becomes very attractive to the Supreme Lord.
Recently there was a debate that this Ativarada in Kanchipuram, 40 years he was not worshipped. Once in 40 years he comes out, and one reporter is asking a Sri Vaishnava Pandit, how can we worship the deity which was not worshipped? Then the GN is telling Pandit, if 10 devotees with faith stand near a deity, the Lord comes in the deity form, avahana. Mm-hmm. Even if it's not worshipped 40 years, if many devotees show faith on the particular deity,
it
manifests the power.
Well, the Lord has his own will, so even though he's not worshipped for 40 years, and according to Pancharatra, if there's not worship, then the Lord's not there, and then you have to reinstall the deity or something like that. So that's the Pancharatric, let's say, rule. Ultimately, the Lord, of course, is beyond rules, but we have rules there to regulate devotees in this world so they don't stop worshiping the Lord. But ultimately, the Lord can do whatever he wants, and we find that some forms, the Lord is self-manifesting, like in some Nishrimadeva deities. They didn't install them at all, but they weren't worshiping them also, but the Lord was always there. Or we have Shalagram Shila, they're sitting in the river, in the Gandaki River, and nobody's worshiping it, but they're also the Lord, and the Lord is eternally there also. So the Lord can manifest himself wherever he wants under any particular circumstances. But we do have Pancharatric rules simply for the jiva, so that we can, the jivas don't neglect the worship of the Lord.
You see that, the Lord gives a potential for the Atma to realize based upon its own capacity, capabilities. But the jivas present in the matter, how do they get that opportunity?
Present.
Matter is, jiva is also present in the matter. How do they get the opportunity?
Bodies matter. What matter are you talking about?
Like earth. There are so many jivas in there.
They all have bodies there also. Worms or whatever, or bacteria. They got their own bodies there. But they're not so developed, that's all.
This part of wood is also said to be matter.
Yes.
It's having some living entities, I mean, in it, jivas.
Well, maybe some viruses and some, but they all got their particular bodies within that. In other words, this particular form is made by some human being. So it's not that the jiva entered there when they made a table or anything like that.
But matter has some energy.
Energy, yes, but it's a different shakti, it's not the jiva. Maya shakti is completely different from the jiva. It's unconscious. And like the body is unconscious and there's a jiva there. Of course, we have other jivas then, it's also bacteria and worms and whatever in the body, but the jiva and matter are quite different.
How does the Advaitavadis explain the form of the Lord? They say that it is Brahman, and by Maya, somehow or other, he gets the form, it is explained.
Saguna Brahman.
How is it somehow?
Sattvic Maya is the form of the Lord. So it's material, temporary. It's not ultimately Brahman, in other words. It's the better part of the material world, we could say, sattvic, the form of the Lord. So Vishnu is very sattvic body, material body. That's all. But ultimately illusory. Since all matter and all gunas are illusory also.
Maharaj, now you said all the Lord's expansions are eternally present in the spiritual world, Swamsas. Now, does it mean that the Lord does not desire to manifest a new Amsa, a new avatar or something? Does that desire never come to the Lord?
Well, we know that all the forms are eternal. So in that sense, we can't say newer forms always come out that are produced. If it looks like it's new, it was there before also. Whatever is there. Now, we have listed forms, authorized forms in the scriptures, like in the Bhagavatam, two different lists are given. And then our acharyas comment on those lists. And they don't introduce or say that there are other forms also. But then we do have, for instance, in Simhachalam, there's a form of the Lord that's a combination of, I think, Varaha, Narsimhadeva, or something like that. So it looks like we have a little variation there also. But, for instance, we don't get a dog avatar or like that, you know, or an insect avatar. So, you know, it looks like there is some authorized forms, and the Lord sticks to those forms more than other things.
The Lord appears in all species and planetary systems.
Yeah. Well, in one sense, because everything is an expansion of the Lord, so everything is the Lord, including matter, so in that sense, he appears in all species. They represent him in some way, like there's vibhutis.
So can we say that the list given in Srimad Bhagavatam is exhaustive and there's nothing else beyond that?
Well, there may be details, but it presents the most important principles, which are unchangeable.
Maharaj, regarding Ativardhar, actually this cycle of 40 years is was decided by some devotees who discovered those deities. So it is not, I don't know what basis they decided 40 years. But then you are also saying that the deity is not worshipped, like during the house program. You are saying the deity is not worshipped and they are put to rest, then Lord can also leave.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So every time when the deities are brought out in that case, the devotees request the Lord to appear in the deity form, in that deity form. Do we understand that way?
No, that's what they usually do. Yeah. They call the deity in. But then if we have a Pratishtha ceremony, then we don't call them in every day. They're always there. But then other deities are called in and then they're told to leave, that, which we don't prefer. Usually we don't prefer that method. But this done among the smartas and others. They call the deity and they tell them to leave. We're like in the Ganesh
we call the deity Ganesha and they tell him to leave and then they throw him in the river like this. So it's like this temporary worship.
So Maharaj, sometimes we also discover deities. There are cases where devotees discover deities. Mm. Like Madhavendrapuri, he discovered a deity. Mm-hmm. So how do we understand it was Swayambhu?
Similar, yeah. So they don't install them, but they had a ceremony as such to welcome the deity in that case. Ultimately, the Lord enters by the affection of the devotee, basically. And even the installation ceremony is ultimately is due to the devotion that the Lord enters, not due to the ceremony. But according to rule, there is ceremony also.
Lord.
So even in the worship, in Pancharatrik worship, ultimately it's the devotion that calls the Lord into the form, not the ceremony itself, but they do have this whole ceremony also as part of Vaidhi Bhakti.
In the verse 85, the personified yogis, Vedas, they explain about chakras and Paramatma in very detail. The certain part is very technical. He said like some yogis are called Arunis. They are worshipping the soul along with the super soul. So that day when I was giving class, the question was asked, when the body leaves, the soul goes into another body. Whereas the Paramatma is always accompanying the soul. That Paramatma is actually pervaded everywhere. Same Paramatma goes, so it's just like that in the same next body.
What's that?
How to understand that Paramatma is also traveling along with the soul?
Well, Supreme Lord is unlimited. He's everywhere anyway. So he doesn't have to even travel because he's everywhere anyway. But the idea is that he is the witness for that particular jiva, and he takes care of the jiva and helps him and everywhere. So he's personal. At the same time, he's everywhere. But he can localize himself with each jiva. But he's unlimited in his powers and whatever, so we don't have to think of how he can travel or anything like that because he's everywhere anyway. He's spiritual, not material.
It's just like a house owner, he'll always be in that one of the flat. The rental people keep coming and going. The people pay rent, after 3 months, one more tenant will be coming. Can we understand it that way? The Lord is always there. The soul keeps coming to a different body.
Well, of course, the soul goes into different bodies. And we say that the Lord accompanies that jiva everywhere. So that is for our understanding that he follows the jiva everywhere. But even the jiva going to a body, that's our space and time concept right now, which is not quite accurate probably also, that the jiva is going from here to there or whatever like that. So the jiva also is beyond space and time. So we are kind of explaining this all in terms of our limited experience of how the jiva travels. So how the Lord travels, of course, is even more inexplicable than how the jiva travels from one place to the other, because it's all beyond, he's completely beyond space and time.
Same purport, it says that the Lord is the indwelling companion of jiva in the heart. The Lord who endows is independent with the power of knowledge and inspires him with all varieties of practical intelligence. Just as the physical heart is the center of all blood circulation, so the subtle heart chakra is a crossroads of numerous channels of prana called nadis, which extend outwards to all parts of the body. When these passageways have been sufficiently purified, the Aruni yogis can leave the heart region and go upward to the chakra, the roof of the brain. Yogis who leave their bodies through this chakra, the Brahma Rantra, can directly go to the kingdom of God, from which they will never return home back to this material world. Thus, even the unsure process of meditation yoga can bear the fruit of pure devotion if it is followed perfectly. Question is, how they follow this process perfectly, even these yogis can go back to Godhead.
But they
it's not mentioned Brahman or thing.
But they have to have devotion. These yogis are devotees also. So this is Yoga Misra Bhakti, which is also described in the Bhagavad Gita chapter 8. There's Yoga Misra Bhakti, concentrate on the Agya Chakra, etc. So one can combine these methods. And it's described in various places in the Upanishad how the soul can travel through the various nadis and get liberation. But you can't just do it by technique. You also have to worship the Lord to do that. So in other words, you must have devotion. So it's not just a technique of the yogi, but he also has to have that devotion and worship of the Supreme Lord. And then the Lord allows that to happen or makes that a proper arrangement.
Nadis are subtle blood vessels, or?
Well, of course, we can say they're something like prana, very subtle channels within the material body, related to the subtle body, actually.
But this wood has been part of a live tree.
What?
This wood has been part of a live tree.
Mm-hmm.
From the tree only this comes. Life is there in the tree, we say that. And we say that we agree that the Lord pervades all matter also. How is that we understand that Lord pervades this matter? How it acts with the...
Well, one is his energy. So the Lord is not different from his energy. So Maya Shakti is the Shakti of the Lord. So he's non-different from it. So in that sense, it's the Lord. So we say everything is Brahman. Huh? And because all the Shaktis are non-different from the Lord. So material energy is non-different from the Lord. Jiva Shakti is non-different from the Lord. Antaranga Shakti is non-different from the Lord. So everything is ultimately the Lord in that sense. Huh? And then, of course, everything is under the control of the Lord. The Shaktis are controlled by the Lord, so in that sense he is everything, because all the Shaktis are are controlled by him, and they do exactly as they say. So in that sense they are also non-different from the Supreme Lord. What's that? Any?
Transformation of matter, there is a living force behind that. There's a living entity behind that. But then, Maharaj, we have these walls. So this is apparently not, there's no living entity there. But we expect some energy concentration, or what, I don't know, what is the purpose, some channelization of energy. Which means that even matter can actually do that. Not necessarily, even matter can do that.
Do what?
Channelize energy. Like we have these crystals,
well,
and...
Yeah, of course, so we can see that mountains get smaller or something, or waves of the ocean move. So it's not that you need exactly the jiva inside each wave, mm-hmm. or something like that. So yeah, matter itself has energy, but obviously it is related to some living energy. So therefore, Prakriti can do nothing unless... the Lord injects the jivas into Prakriti, then it transforms into Mahatattva. Otherwise it just sits there. When it gets, the jiva gets in there, Mahatattva happens, and then it goes into Tamago, and we get Ahankara, and then we get all the material elements. So there is the element of consciousness contacting matter that creates that first initial transformation, definitely.
For example, Maharaj, this one devotee is working in the nuclear power reactor. So he was saying that the actual construction of nuclear power reactor, he said that was only discovered in nature. It was not invented. He was saying that the natural cores which occurred on the earth, and the scientists studied that, and based on that then they created the natural reactors. So the neutrons travel, and then the water within that is heated up, and because of that, so then they understood that they can use it that way. Maharaj, also here there is this description of worship of the feet of the Lord, and so we also see that the first two cantos of Bhagavatam are compared to the feet of the Lord. So is it figurative or is it the actual worship?
No, both. In other words, we bow down to someone's feet, so we bow down to the feet of the Lord, etc. So in that sense, worship is there. Yeah. But then again, it also means submission in general, so it's figurative in that sense that we surrender to the Lord.
So can we say the knowledge in the first two cantos inspires us to surrender? Is that we can say? Because that considers...
Well, I suppose the whole Bhagavatam is for surrender, isn't it? Not just the first two cantos. Well, because when you bow down, you see the feet. Yeah? That's the first aspect, the lowest aspect for us. So it means we surrender. Yeah, but then in relation to the Lord, it's also high. But then again, for us to bow down to the feet means that we are in the low position. So we surrender.
Also, Maharaj, while having darshan of the Lord, it is generally considered in the etiquette that one first we should see his feet and then gradually go up to his face.
Mm.
So, otherwise, is it an offense if that etiquette is not followed? I mean, invariably.
But there's one procedure to go from the feet upwards. But then, of course, we do see that the exalted devotees are meditating on the smile of the Lord or the lotus eyes of the Lord. That's also there. So, it's not that it has to only be in that manner. But we can say in sadhana, basically, we start with the feet.
Purnaj, in relation to the question Sindrapa was asking, the yogi who is able to
raise his life force through that particular nadi, the Susumsha nadi or something is mentioned there in the purport there, he is able to get liberation, it says, but it is not said that he'll attain the Lord.
Well, some yogis do get liberation only because that's what they want. And they may worship the Lord to get liberation. The Lord gives them liberation. Other yogis can attain the Lord in the spiritual world if they so desire that and they have that devotion. Depends on the yogi.
Through Paramatma they can realize that.
Well, they all have to get the mercy of Paramatma even for liberation. Can't get liberation if we reject the Lord. Well, it's also elements, Akash, air, etc. Pranas are made out of air, element, etc. So it's a more subtle combination of elements.
Maharaj, what is the identification of soul if we don't have subtle body or gross body? What is the identification of soul?
Well, if you practice jnana, then you'd simply exist beyond material body as Brahman. If you practice bhakti, but then you have identity as an Atma, as a servant of the Lord.
Oh, here we are identifying by seeing the faces. In soul case, how we identify? This soul is this, this soul is this.
Who?
In so form of the soul. Huh? What is the form of soul?
Depends. If you don't develop any relationship with the Lord, then you simply enter in Brahman with ambiguous form, nothing really, because you don't use it. If you worship the Lord, then you develop a form to serve the Lord.
Why Lord not interfering in Jivatma's small independence? Jivatma, that independence he is using wrong way, the small independence. Why Lord not forcing to worship him?
Why the Lord is not forcing him? Then he wouldn't be a Jiva. He would be part of the Lord. It's a little particle of the Lord worshipping the Lord. No?
Maharaj, in the previous cantos mentioned that devotee through his pure devotional service will attain the lotus feet of the Lord. So what does the lotus feet of the Lord means, and what is the highest form of devotional service a devotee can offer to the Lord?
What is the
highest
lotus
form of
mean, what is the highest form of devotional service?
Well, there's no highest. It's an individual preference on how we want to serve the Lord. In any case, the idea is we want to please the Lord. That's all. Huh? And if it's 100% only for the pleasure of the Lord, and nothing for ourselves, then that's the highest type of prema. And that's pleasing to the Lord. It may take different forms, in Sakya Rasa, or Vatsalya Rasa, or Madhurya Rasa, or Dasya Rasa. But it's all pure, with no self-interest in it. So that's what's pleasing to the Lord.
Also, a devotee through his devotional service will seek the lotus feet of the Lord. What does the lotus feet of the Lord exactly means? Shelter under the lotus feet of
the Lord. Well, that's what we just explained. Obviously, we can worship the feet. We can worship any part of the Lord, his eyes, his hands, the sound of his flute or anything. But often the lotus feet are mentioned because it also indicates surrender. No, that's all figurative again. Now, obviously, in different bodies, he could be different sizes. An elephant body could be bigger, and in an ant, he'll be smaller. So, it's not absolute.